I'm here with world champ, former world champion, Ken Anderson. And how are you doing this evening?
I'm good. Very good. Excited to be here.
This isn't the first time you worked for them, right?
This is the first time I've worked for this promotion. Excited. I watched another show in this building earlier today. I watched the girls' show, and I'm looking forward to tonight. See what the guys can do.
Do you know anything about some of the talent that's on this roster so far?
Like, just a few. I actually had a chance to watch the guy that I'm going to work, that I'm going to wrestle tonight. I had a chance to watch him a few weeks ago. I was on a show with him. So, and there's a couple other guys. I've been doing a little more independent work recently because my schedule allows me to do so.
Yeah.
Now with TNA, our taping schedule has been so tight, and we'll do 6 weeks of television in 3 days and just bang it out. And then I have the rest of the month to do whatever I want. This month alone, I have 21 dates booked out of 31, and only 4 of those dates are TNA dates. So, yeah.
And where else do you wrestling across the United States?
All over the place. Actually, this month, I'm doing a lot of international travel. I'm going to Australia for 6 days. Going to be in Orlando for 4 days for tapings for Impact. I will be heading to the UK for another 5 days. So,
have you ever done Australia before?
Yes. Yeah, I've been there several times. I was there a few times with WWE. And then I also went with the Hogan tour after I left WWE. Hogan and Bischoff put together a tour where Hogan wrestled Flair every night, and I was on that tour too. So, looking forward to going back there. It's one of my favorite places to travel in the world. Yeah.
Why is that?
The people are wonderful. The culture is awesome. The weather is obviously good.
Yeah.
The cities are very clean. There's lots of stuff to do. It's just a cool experience. Crowds are usually very hot, too. Hot for wrestling. Another one of my favorite places, obviously, is the UK. TNA right now has such a huge following over in the UK.
Yeah, I've seen they've done a lot of tapings over there.
It's just, it's fantastic. The crowds are always white hot when we're over there. And
to go off of that, like, do you prefer wrestling overseas than wrestling in the United States? Because sometimes it's a little hard in some places. Well, you know, they're tough here in New York City. And they focus more on wrestling rather than charities, but they'd rather see more pure wrestling matches.
Yeah.
Enjoy wrestling overseas more? Do you enjoy wrestling here? Like, does it fit your style over there or over here? Or what's the case?
I like it all, man. I you know what? I just try to go out there and tell stories, make people laugh, make people feel something, some kind of emotion, take them on a little bit of an emotional roller coaster ride, and just have fun. That's what I want people to do, especially in these shows.
Yes.
These shows are a little different than our televised shows, obviously. To come to these and just have fun. It's a night out with their kids, with their wives. It's a night away from the kids or their wives. Just have a good time, and that's what I try to do. So, I like wrestling in the States. I like wrestling overseas. I think the cool thing about wrestling in so many different locations is that wrestling fans from different areas like different things, and it's always interesting and a bit of a challenge to try to push yourself to figure out what it is that makes those people click. So, you have to adapt, improvise, and overcome.
I've had
situation.
When I talk to a few of the guys that work in a promotion on a monthly basis, they all say the same thing. Like, you know, you basically have to adapt because they see you all the time. You have to give them a different show almost every month because, you know, they don't want to see the same old stuff. And like you said, they want to have fun. They want to enjoy themselves.
Yeah.
They want to come out here and, you know, a day to get away, basically.
Yep, absolutely.
So based on your wrestling experience, when you walk into this locker room here, like, you feel like, you know, because of the experience, they look at you as like a locker room leader for the night, and basically someone that's going to show them some things that they didn't know already, or something new that they can learn?
I don't know if they, you know, that's, I guess it's just individual situation. Each person is individual, and you always have people who approach you and want to watch their match. pick things apart for them, give them constructive criticism. And then you get people who are sort of standoffish for various reasons, too. Some people are just shy. Some people just don't care. Some people, you know, you get the whole gamut of personalities. And I just try to come in, and if somebody asks me to watch their match, I will make as best an effort as I possibly can to do that and to give them some feedback. I like helping people out. I like passing on some of the knowledge that I was able to glean from the people that I've worked with in the past. So, yeah.
What were you like early in your career? Like, were you someone who, like, reached out to the older talent and asked them for advice and stuff like that, and to pick apart their match?
Every single time that I was on a show where there was a name, somebody that was brought in from either WWE or WCW or wherever, or even just a bigger indie name, I would usually try to come up with a decent question to ask them or ask them to watch my match. And I was definitely a sponge. When I would do, I guess what I did indies, I would always get my stuff on, go head down to the ring and stand around, and I would just, a lot of times I wouldn't even be in the ring wrestling, but I would be listening to what was going on and what was being said, and I picked up so much stuff that way. So
that was another question I was going to ask you, like, working over the years, since you've worked in possibly the two biggest promotions right now in North America, like, What did you learn from working in these two companies, TNA and WWE, that's really sticking with you further and further throughout your career?
Wow. You know, it's funny because I remember having my very last match that I had on the independent scene was a match that I had in Green Bay. It was a cage match. At the time, I thought we did a really good job of storytelling and making everything make sense. About 2 or 3 months later, I watched that tape. I had been in OVW for 2 or 3 months and already learned so much. When I watched that tape, I was disgusted by it because I'm like, wow, we did that wrong. We did that wrong. That's wrong. That's wrong. That's wrong. So, what was the question again? I'm sorry. I kind of got off on tangent there.
No, but it was on tangent what we were talking about. I said going from, like, say, because you worked for TNA, you worked for WWE. I said, yeah. What did you learn that actually, like, stuck with you right now in your career, or that's continuing to stick with you in your career?
It's just, I guess the thing that really sticks with me is you cannot reinvent the wheel. You can figure out different ways of storytelling, but there are certain things that just work. Mm-hmm. And if you can figure out those ways of manipulating people's emotions or pointing out things, one of the things that I do is I point out things that are obvious. A lot of times something happens in a match, you screw up. Mm-hmm. If you just keep going forward as if nothing happened, the crowd sees it. They know you screwed up. They know that you know that they know that that you screwed up.
Yeah.
And it's a very awkward situation. So those situations, I point out the obvious. Yep, we just screwed up or something. And it lets them in on the joke. Again, entertain, have fun, and try to make things make as much sense as you can.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at some point, it is wrestling. When you send a guy into the ropes, there's no reason that he turns and pivots and comes back off the ropes exactly the same every time. Those are things that we just accept and wrestle. But there are things that we need to do to make people can't necessarily put their finger on why something looks off or wrong or doesn't make sense in the ring. They just mentally, they know, and they kind of check out of the match. So, yeah, I guess it's just trying to make sure that everything makes sense.
Being that since you're a really charismatic guy, has there ever been a time where you thought that something that, well, a character, well, not even necessarily a character, but was there ever a time where you didn't think that you might not be able to get over with the crowd of anything that you've ever done?
I guess. My biggest fear, or my biggest shortcoming, I would say, is as a baby face, because I tend to walk that, I toe the line a little bit. I'm not your white meat typical baby face, you know. I say things like, I hate people. Like, I have a t-shirt that says, I hate people. That's not a typical baby face thing to say. Again, I'm losing my train of thought here. I was this noise going on. I'm sorry. What was the question?
The question was has there ever been a time where you
didn't think that I was going to get over it? Yeah. And I guess my baby face, I have more of a hard time connecting with audiences as a baby face, or I did. I'm sort of figuring it out now because I've been
everybody loves
doing
baby
it.
Face. Like right
but
now.
It's I'm still, like I said, I figured out that I can walk that line.
Yeah, and still be like,
I can point stuff out. I can pick on somebody in the crowd, which is normally something that a heel would do.
Yeah.
If it's done the right way. And it's sort of a wink and a nod, and you're not totally trashing that person. And you let everybody else in on the joke. So, yeah, babyface. I used to have a really hard time with babyface. I love being a heel. I love being a bad guy.
I feel like there's a lot of people that love being a bad guy.
Well, it's the thing is it's easy. It's not as much of a challenge because it's easy to go to people that hate you.
Yeah, and
it's really easy. You don't have to try too hard to get people to not like you. It's very hard for people to genuinely feel a connection with you and want to like you and want to get behind you. I mean, a lot of times the fans will play the game with you, but they're not really latching on. They don't really care. They're just...
I feel like everybody really started liking you more when you started calling yourself an asshole. And everybody just
that
like,
was,
you know what? Everybody's like, you know what? I think I'm an asshole.
I think that the best thing to do... connect with people, and people, you know, I hear people say all the time, like, I really am an asshole, like, you know, if somebody cuts me off in traffic, I'm a total asshole, or, you know, this, that, the other, I'm an asshole to my wife, or I'm an asshole to my kids, or whatever it is, and at some point, again, it's pointing out the obvious, and, you know, I hate people stuff. As I said before, that's not a typical good guy thing to say.
Yeah.
But you know, I hear so many people say that on a regular basis. I hate people.
Yeah.
I hate people. When I wear a shirt like that through the airport, I get people. I love that shirt. I say that all the time. Where can I get that shirt? It's relating to people. The reason Stone Cold Steve Austin was so popular wasn't necessarily just because he was fighting his boss, and it was because he was relatable. People said, like, I get that guy because I'm kind of like that guy, or they at least had visions of grandeur and saw themselves as that guy, or wanted to see themselves as that guy. They can relate, and I think that's the number one thing to do, is try to pick stuff that people can relate to. That's ultimately, I think, in all storytelling, that is what draws us to characters.
Next question is, since my memory serves me correctly, I believe the last match that Eddie Guerrero ever had was against you, correct?
Yes, correct.
Like, how does it feel? How was it working with him, number one? And number two is, how does it feel to know that you had the last match with him? Which is actually a pretty good match. It was a really entertaining match as well.
I learned something new every time that I worked Eddie. And he was a guy that when I got there, he was very open and inviting and warm and friendly, and said, like, he would pay attention to everybody's matches, not just his own. And he would watch my stuff and critique it. And he gave me a lot of good advice. And life advice, too. I mean, I remember traveling with... I was just thinking about this the other day. I was traveling with Eddie and Chris Benoit. And we went to a Bob Evans restaurant. And it was packed. It was a Sunday morning or something like that. It was packed. The lobby is always crowded with people. They've just come in... church, they want to eat Sunday brunch, Well, one of the reporters or the hosts recognized us, said, come on, I'll get you a table right away. And Eddie stopped him and said, hey, man, we'll wait just like everybody else. Don't treat us any differently. Like, these people don't know who we are. Like, doesn't, like, just treat us like you would every other person. Don't change your morals because of who you're around. And I think that's just great advice. Don't change who you are because you're around somebody. People, a lot of times you'll see, you work for a company, people act a certain way when the boss isn't around, and then they act a different way when the boss is around. Like, if you just act the same way all the time, then you have nothing to worry about. So, yeah.
And, well, when I do all these interviews, I've interviewed a few dancers, I interviewed a few wrestlers here, and I always like to end it with a very fun question. What has been, let's say, the most embarrassing thing that's ever happened to you in a wrestling match? Like, fun, but also funny. Like, what's the most embarrassing thing, yet funny thing that's ever happened to you in wrestling?
The most embarrassing thing that ever happened. I really can't think of anything too embarrassing, because I'm usually the one embarrassing myself, like, intentionally, so, you know, especially if I'm a bad guy, that's...
But what have you done to embarrass yourself intentionally?
What's that?
So, well, what have you done to embarrass yourself intentionally?
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I guess none of this stuff has happened to me, knock on wood, but I guess some of the most embarrassing things that I've heard of other people happening are, you know, a lot of, I have several friends who have shit themselves while
that's
wrestling.
Crazy.
Yeah. You know, grown men.
Well, I hope that doesn't happen. She said it never happened.
No.
I hope it doesn't happen.
I hope so, too.
I hope, definitely not tonight.
No. I'm feeling pretty good tonight. Stomach's okay. But, yeah, I've heard of people, you know, it's disgusting because in this, you know, what do? You stop the match? I mean.
Yeah.
It's just weird. You got to keep going, I guess.
Yeah. One last question. Like, what do you like outside of wrestling? Like a huge Katy Perry fan or something crazy like that? Like,
I am a huge, I study religion.
What is that?
I study religion.
Study religion?
Yep.
What religion?
I am not religious. I'm not a believer. I have a podcast where we discuss, see, in my life, most of my friends and almost all of my family members, my close family members, are all Christians, Jews, they all believe, and they all, most of them believe very, very strongly and deeply, and I found that people were kind of saying, you need to do this, you're missing this chunk out of your life, it's very important, and so I started, okay, I'm gonna look into it a little more. I'm gonna read these books. I'm gonna read the Bible. I'm gonna read the Quran. I'm gonna read the Book of Mormon and stuff like that. And it's just fascinating. It's fascinating to see what people believe and why they believe it. And I don't know, to sort of figure out, like, I think there are a lot of contradictions within all the different texts. Like, all of them can't be right. They can't all be right. It's not possible, right? So how do you determine which ones are right, which ones aren't? So anyway, that's basically what I was getting at. I have a podcast. It's called Push the Button. And you can get it on iTunes, Stitcher. And we discuss politics, religion, hot button issues that kind of piss people off. And one of the reasons why I started doing it is because I feel like we've gotten this meme in this country that these things that are supposedly the most important things in our lives, religion, governs everything that we do, like it affects all of our daily activities and the way we go about our lives. Most people find their religion to be extremely, you know, a huge part of their life. But we're told we're not supposed to talk about it. Why? Why are we not supposed to talk about it? And I think it's okay to challenge people's opinions, challenge people's beliefs. I mean, the reason we don't have slavery anymore in this country is because somebody thought to challenge somebody's opinion, somebody's belief. So, I know that's kind of an interesting segue and maybe a little too
extreme.
No, it's perfect. It's something that no one would really think, you know?
Yep.